From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
There are Republicans in the Florida legislature who admit there's a very good reason why they're following the lead of the guy who's the current president of the United States.
But my reward for that loyalty is I'm going to Congress.
Also this week, it's not only Tallahassee lawmakers that are under the gun to bend to the president's wishes.
The play that the Trump White House is trying to make is that Congress is not actually the most important part of government. The president is.
We'll also take an in-depth look at some big deal bills that are already racing through the legislative process a lot sooner than usual, and we'll find out why Florida lawmakers are taking autism seriously this session. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com.
This year, Florida Republicans have a number of bills aimed at showing support to President Donald Trump and his administration. Regan McCarthy takes us to the Florida Capitol, where some of those measures are moving quickly through the process.
The busy legislative session is just getting underway here, where we're not far from the big body of water the state's Republican lawmakers are no longer calling the Gulf of Mexico.
The name has changed. It's now the Gulf of America.
Republican State Senator Joe Gruters is behind a bill he says will align Florida with an executive order from the Trump administration by renaming the Gulf in state law and in future materials purchased by schools.
Listen, we want our kids to have the correct names of everything moving forward. And so this is just a way to do that.
That's just one of the bills Florida's Republican-controlled legislature has brought up recently as political players jockey to show their support and loyalty to President Donald Trump and his administration's agenda. There's also a measure to pave the way for Trump to build a presidential library in the state. Another bill would block local governments from adding fluoride to public water, something Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. previously pushed for. Then there's legislation recently passed in Florida to crack down on illegal immigration.
This bill was always from the get-go to work with the president, President Trump, his executive orders, to push his agenda. At the end of the day, he deserves credit for all of this.
That's Gruters again, a longtime supporter of Trump. Something Republican State Senator Randy Fine says can pay off in Florida.
Now, I showed tonight what loyalty to Donald Trump meant.
Senator Fine is running with the president's support in a special election for the congressional seat left open when Trump tapped Mike Waltz to be his national security advisor. Fine made his statement to his colleagues on the Senate floor just after winning the Republican primary for the seat. He's widely expected to clinch the special election in April.
I didn't endorse him for politics, so we can get into why I did that over a year ago. It was issues, and one that's most important to me. But my reward for that loyalty is I'm going to Congress.
Trump's endorsement weighs heavily in the state, but certainly not for every Floridian. Earlier this year, hundreds of people gathered at the state capitol shouting and waving signs to protest the president and his administration. Among them was 19-year-old Florida State University student Madeline Probst. She disagrees with the president's recent executive orders.
Yeah, I'm hoping he gets impeached for the unconstitutionality of his actions. But if I do have to do this for 4 years, so be it.
Democrats have pushed back against Florida's Republican supermajority, saying time during the state's 60-day session would be better spent on issues like housing costs and skyrocketing property insurance rates. I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
When the founders of the United States crafted the U.S. Constitution, they created a new form of government designed to strike a power balance between three fundamental branches. The goal was to prevent absolute power from falling into the hands of one person or one group. WGCU's Mike Canary talks with Florida State University political scientist Dr. Andrew Ballard about his new book that explores how minority parties in Congress can exert political power and how historic norms are being challenged by the Trump administration.
I just wonder, what does all of this mean in your book when we have an executive who is trying to stretch the boundaries of executive power in a way that Congress doesn't even seem like part of the story right now? Does that make sense?
I think it absolutely makes sense. There are a couple things going on here. One is that Congress is often overshadowed by the president in the early days of a presidential administration, right? A president gets elected. They claim a mandate, even though, you know, Donald Trump in doing so had one of the smallest margins of victory of a president in modern times. And they claim that that mandate gives them the right to do whatever it was that they campaigned on. Seeing that it is hard to get stuff done because of a lot of the constraints that I was talking about, what the Trump administration has decided to do is to go after a version of what's called unitary executive theory, which is based on some jurisprudence that actually conservative Justice Antonin Scalia was the lone dissent on. And Republicans in Congress seem at least either willing to let the executive take this power now because they are in agreement with whatever the president is doing, or at minimum because they don't disagree with what he's doing enough to want to go against the standard bearer for their own party. If Democrats controlled either chamber of Congress currently, you can bet that there would be a flurry of more legislation trying to rein in the power of the president. But as it stands, he hasn't done anything yet that is taking enough power from Congress in ways that enough Republicans are incentivized to speak up. That said, there is a lot of, you know, opposition to the president's current administration going on in the courts, and how those battles play out is going to be quite interesting. I could see it going any number of ways.
Let's talk about Florida just a little bit.
Sure.
Florida seems to me to be an example of when the minority has as little power as possible. Is that a fair assessment? You live up there in Tallahassee.
I do. In contemporary Florida politics, I would absolutely agree with that. And a lot of the reason for it is structural, right? Republicans control the governor's seat and have supermajority veto-proof sized coalitions in both houses. So if Republicans are cohesive enough, they can do whatever they want to.
Can you imagine us ever winding up in a place in Washington, D.C. where there's that sort of locked down control by one party or the other?
Well, depending on how courts and Congress respond to the presidency, we might be living there right now.
If the challenges to the checks and balances, co-equal stuff that are being played out right now are allowed to proceed, we would find a different version of what we see in Florida right now.
Yes, absolutely. A different version insofar as Congress still has to do a bunch of stuff. And the sizes of the majorities for Republicans in either chamber of Congress are so small that they're not going to be able to actually pass a bunch of purely partisan legislation. But the play that the Trump White House is trying to make is that Congress is not actually the most important part of government. The president is, and the president gets to be the sole arbiter of what every facet of the bureaucracy can or can't do, even though Congress explicitly in the Constitution has the power of the purse to allocate funds for specific purposes for those agencies.
That was FSU political scientist Andrew Ballard speaking with WGCU's Mike Canary. Ballard co-authored a book due out later this year called Minority Party Capacity in Congress. Coming up on Capitol Report, Florida lawmakers are tackling big issues sooner than usual in this year's session. We'll get analysis from Capitol reporter Tristan Wood.
They've been pushing through some fairly consequential bills through the committee process already.
The Florida Senate gets serious about autism, passing a bill that boosts resources for early detection, intervention, and research.
You know, now that it's 1 in 36 prevalence estimate, it's going to be, you know, more legislators are touched and more people are touched by autism.
And Florida is still wrestling with the matter of name, image, and likeness money in college sports.
And we should not be here today talking about it. University presidents should have solved this issue many, many years ago.
On Capitol Report, we end the second week of the Florida legislative session, and Tristan Wood joins us here. Tristan, I remember when things didn't really start kicking at the Capitol until, I don't know, about towards the end of March, because then it was like, oh, we've only got 30 more days to do this, and we better start rocking and rolling as quickly as we can, because we got a lot of stuff to get done. That is not true this year. They're leaning in really hard and really fast.
Oh, absolutely. They've been pushing through some fairly consequential bills through the committee process already. I've been, you know, staying really busy following a lot of, you know, really impactful from the, you know, the panhandle to the bottom of Florida bills that, you know, are going to really be defining the rest of the, you know, 60-day legislative session.
One thing they haven't done a lot on lately is to look at different kinds of state agencies. It's not kind of like DOGE, what we're seeing in Washington, but there have been some, I guess, rumors on the street that that could be in the offing. But the legislature has already started looking at one particular agency, which is usually on the back burner, and that's the Florida Public Service Commission. What's going on there?
So one proposal from a Pensacola Republican Senator Don Gates would actually expand the number of commissioners on the Public Service Commission. For those of you that don't know, in a lot of areas across the state, there's, you know, your public utilities like FPL, otherwise, where in a lot of areas, they're the only utility on offer, meaning they have a monopoly in their region. So what the Public Service Commission acts as is when they want to increase rates, they go to the Public Service Commission. Those utility have their attorneys. There's an attorney that represents the interests of the ratepayers, the public. And then the Public Service Commission determines whether that rate increase is justified. So what this bill would do, it would add two new people to serve on the Public Service Commission and would require that they be a certified public accountant, one of them, and the other one be a financial advisor. That comes in the context of the state Supreme Court finding in recent years that some of the rate increases that the Public Service Commission approved weren't really justified. And it also comes when FPL now is advocating over the next 5 years for even further rate increases in Florida. So in committee, when Don Gates was advocating for his bill, one of the things that he was talking about is that this will kind of give the Public Service Commission some more expertise to deal with the problem.
Nearly all of the work that the Public Service Commission does requires detailed financial analysis, very detailed and very sophisticated. It doesn't always happen that the gubernatorial appointments have that background. And so I want to make sure that that background is reposed in the commission itself, just as it's reposed in the executives who hire experts from out of state to come in and plead their case.
We are missing a lieutenant governor in Florida. Does anyone know where that person went?
Jeanette Nunez has been appointed the interim president of Florida International University, FIU. So that position is kind of vacant. And Governor Ron DeSantis has said that he's going to hold off on making an appointment for that position until after the legislative session, kind of using it as a political chip. However, a couple Florida lawmakers are pursuing a proposal that would do away with that position. Merritt Island Republican Representative Tyler Sirois is proposing a bill. It would have to go through a constitutional amendment process because that position is enshrined in the Florida's Constitution, but it would propose a constitutional amendment that would remove that position and replace it with a Commissioner of Government Accountability. Now, Sirois, when he was advocating for that bill in committee, said it's inspired by that national messaging around the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, that the Trump administration is really pushing.
We bring this amendment proposal forward in the spirit of the national conversation that is going on right now about reducing the size and scope of government, creating more efficiencies in our government operations, making sure that our citizens are well served and that their taxpayer dollars are well spent.
What that new role would do, helm Florida's Departments of Law Enforcement, Veteran Affairs, and Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. And it would be responsible for essentially auditing Florida's other departments. So it would act as a check on the other state agencies that the governor directly oversees and other spending that the legislature advocates for and pushes, as well as Florida's university system. What would happen if the legislature passes this bill is it would go to voters to vote on in 2026, would need 60% approval from Florida voters in the general midterm elections. And if that happens, the legislature would appoint the first person in that position, and then the first time Florida voters could decide who sits in that role is in 2028.
Well, Tristan Wood, while we are talking about constitutional amendments, I recall what, in 2020, Florida voters passed a state minimum wage. And ever since, it seems as though Florida lawmakers have been kind of ranting and railing against that. Certainly the business community has made its opposition to this known. And there's always an opportunity to work around constitutional amendments. We seem to be really good at that in Florida. So what's going on with that minimum wage since that opposition continues?
So one proposal is getting a lot of media coverage and attention. It's a bill from Fort Myers Republican Senator Jonathan Martin. It would allow some employees, like those in apprenticeship programs, work studies, and internships, to voluntarily opt out of those requirements. So they could go to their employer and say, hey, we waive away our right to be compensated that. Martin thinks it would provide young people who don't have employable skills to be able to trade more compensation for getting work experience. But critics, like Florida Rising's Jackson Overlink, in the committee process, say that the lax definition of internship could lead to jobs being reclassified as internships. Since there's no state statute definition of what an internship is, entry-level positions like at a fast food place or a grocery store, those entry-level jobs could just be called an internship now, and those working those positions could be paid under minimum wage.
And let's be honest, no worker truly opts out of fair wages. There are zero protections in this bill against coercion, fraud, or employer intimidation, meaning bad actors can and will exploit it.
Some Republicans, specifically State Senator Joe Gruters, who's a close Trump ally and has other bona fides amongst Republicans, have expressed concerns with that already. One of his concerns was like, oh, why shouldn't like an age limit like those under 18 this applies for, or having some other age limit to make sure that, you know, older workers who need to support themselves and aren't just, you know, living with their parents and working, why isn't there a change like that to make sure that this bill is only impacting like younger people with no experience looking to get their first employment? Changes to that bill, you know, may come, but then again, it might stay as it is as it's working through the legislature.
That is a great explanation, and we thank public media intern Tristan Wood for
intern?
That explanation.
Intern, please listen. No, I do not want to be paid some $50 an hour.
Tristan Wood, who is a very experienced and well-respected and good-ranking kind of guy here at WFSU Public Media. Thanks for the report on week two in the Florida session. Thanks, Tristan.
Thanks for speaking with me.
This week, the Florida Senate unanimously passed a measure aimed at improving the lives of children with autism and their families. The bill works to increase early detection and intervention while filling in the gaps in educational opportunities. As Margie Menzel reports, one part of the bill is directed at research to learn why autism is increasing.
According to Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell, the bill's sponsor, Florida has more than 20,000 preschoolers in Florida who are diagnosed with autism and more than 66,000 children in the school system who have autism.
And we look at the services that we are providing for them. Is it adequate? Is it enough? Are we really doing what the state of Florida needs to do to diagnose, treat, and provide services to individuals with autism? And this bill is the next step, an amazing big step.
Experts say the need for those services is growing all the time. Amy Weatherby oversees the Autism Institute and the Center for Autism and Related Disorders at Florida State University. She's an expert on the prevalence of autism, and she says that before 1970, it was considered rare. That year, 4 in 2,500 individuals were considered to be autistic. The prevalence continues to grow, but the biggest increase was between 1970 and 1975. That year, the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Act, known as IDEA, was passed. Weatherby says it made a major difference in what we understand as the prevalence of autism.
And before that time, principals of a school could literally send the child home and say to the parent, your child's too difficult, we can't educate your child, take him home. But starting in 1975, we have this law that says free appropriate education for all. And so the U.S. Department of Education then not only oversaw education for, you know, regular education, but also special education.
Today, autism is considered to affect 1 in 36 individuals. Weatherby says that means autism is affecting more people all the time.
You know, now that it's 1 in 36 prevalence estimate, it's going to be, you know, more legislators are touched and more people are touched by autism. Most people have it in their family or know someone that has autism in their family or know someone with autism or, you know, it's so common now, 1 in 36, but likely that's an underestimate.
It's certainly true that Florida lawmakers have people with autism in their lives. Harrell has two nephews with autism, and House Speaker Daniel Perez has a brother with autism. One goal of the Senate bill is to collaborate with other entities that provide autism research and services. That includes the Centers for Autism and Related Disorders, with 7 locations statewide, the Florida Diagnostic and Learning Resources System, and FSU's Autism Institute. It also includes state agencies, the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, the Department of Health, the Department of Education, and the Department of Children and Families. I'm Marty Menzel.
Florida House members today began digging into questions about property insurance companies sending money to affiliated firms and shareholders while arguing the industry was losing money. During a 3-hour hearing, the House Insurance and Banking Subcommittee grilled state insurance officials about a 2022 report that, in part, detailed money going to affiliated firms. The hearing came after a Tampa Bay Times Miami Herald story last month about the report, which had not been provided to lawmakers or released publicly. Lawmakers during the 2022 special session passed a major overhaul that included helping shield insurers from costly lawsuits, an issue the industry blamed for losses. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Florida lawmakers are at a standstill after 3 days of meetings about NIL deals. That's the rule that lets collegiate athletes profit when their name, image, or likeness is used to help a school or business make money. Adrian Andrews reports a federal court case involving the NCAA and players who want to apply NIL retroactively is raising alarms for some in the state about how much that could cost.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, has a name, image, and likeness policy that went into effect in 2021 and was backed by the state legislature. It allows college athletes to benefit from endorsement deals or sell merchandise on the web. The plan has recently been extended to high schoolers with a few limitations. Mike Lofton, a football player at the University of South Florida, spoke on how NIL has changed his life at a recent Florida House workshop.
I have a TikTok page. I like cologne. I post cologne. A couple of years ago, I wasn't able to do that. I wasn't able to monetize. I wasn't able to use an affiliate link. I wasn't able to have people buy the cologne that I like, and I get money off of it. It's huge. And it's also not about the money. It's also about branding myself and also getting myself out there in front of brands.
Lawmakers held the three-day workshop to address key issues surrounding NIL. They used the opportunity to learn more about the policy and if anything can be done to improve it. Miami-Dade Republican Representative Alex Rizzo chaired the meeting.
We will discuss the future of college athletics and a number of critical issues, such as the legal rights of student athletes, the legal responsibilities of our educational institutions, and the impact of those rights and responsibilities on the finances of our university.
Among other things, the group of lawmakers discussed an ongoing legal battle between two former college athletes whose schools are members of the NCAA. The lawsuit, which is being taken up in federal court, is against the NCAA for allegedly not paying players. The suing party hopes the NCAA will include back pay to college athletes who came before NIL deals were introduced. Sarasota's Republican Representative Danny Nix responded to the allegations.
I hate that we've, in my opinion, lost some purity of the college football and that's trickled down to an area I don't think it should be. But we're here. And it's not leaving us. But we got to remember, before this, kids were being paid and taken advantage of dramatically. It was just under the table.
Lawmakers said that the case should be settled next month. The settlement requires the NCAA to pay former and current college athletes nearly $3 billion for the next 10 years. And under the proposed settlement, schools with athletic programs like USF and Florida State University would need to share their revenue with their current athletes, starting out at $20 million. The president of St. Thomas University, David Armstrong, like some lawmakers, had some concerns.
Waited on the NCAA. That was a bad decision. Then the courts took over, and then eventually legislatures take over. And we should not be here today talking about this. University presidents should have solved this issue many, many years ago.
Lawmakers in the House work group ultimately decided to table the discussion for later this year. Representative Rizzo says it's best to keep the legislature out of it until after the NIL settlement has passed. He anticipates having the discussion sometime in the fall. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Mike Canary. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week online and on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.